It's the Becky Giro Show podcast for September 29th, 2011.
Becky, there you have Officer Bologna of some of the NYPD's finest supervisors
finest.
There.
Yeah,
yeah, pepper spraying those
really
those women. They're behind a barricade in New York City and Wall Street.
I'm telling you something, and I'm saying it. I'll say it right now. This is the wave of the future, folks. Yeah. People have finally reached the point where it's like they're getting out in the streets because it's like they don't have anything left to do.
Well, it feels like the last thing that we can do is go out and yell our lungs out at these people. But police abuse, listen to this. It's disturbing to listen to. And they're there on the ground, on the sidewalk, writhing in pain.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable that this is the state of our cities and our police, you know. Have you seen the video? Hey, everybody, how you doing? This is the Rebecca Giro Show. That would be me. And, of course, along with the ever-amazing Mike Scott, that would be him.
Hello there, and I'm wearing my Joe Arpaio honorary pink underwear. Although it didn't come from Joe himself, it is pink, and it is exactly the right thing.
Yep, and don't forget, we've got Babs Kasbar Sipperstein joining us at the bottom of the hour. Babs was just elected to the executive board of the Democratic National Committee.
Pretty cool.
So we're going to talk to Babs about, well, you know, like, what does that mean exactly? Does that help the fight for transgender rights? And just what the hell did the Democrats really think? Do they really deserve our votes after what we saw in the last Congress? We'll hit Babs up with that, and we'll see what she has to say on this topic. And thank you to everybody for joining us, for sticking around. There's so much going on right now. I think it's pretty amazing. You see these cops in New York. I mean, the interesting thing was, and Lawrence O'Donnell pointed this out on his show last night, and I think he was exactly right. It was the rank-and-file cops, you know, the average Joes, the blue shirts, they were fine. They were just keeping people, you know, maintaining order. It was the supervisors, the lieutenant or the inspector or whatever the hell he was, who was the one who was running around pepper spraying people. And you know, you got to ask yourself, is this really what it's come to? You know, I mean, if it was a Tea Party protest, do you think they'd be pepper spraying people? You know, I just think it's ridiculous. And of course, needless to say, when they went to the police department, the police department said, oh, yeah, the cops acted appropriately. Well, what else are they going to say? And see, this is the problem. When you have an organization like the police and they give them self-governance authority, there is no self-governance. There's no governance. They just use it. It's the blue wall of silence. They cover for each other. They protect each other. And how is this a credible way to run a government agency? I don't get it. I think that there should be some kind of supervision here, because clearly the police department in New York City is just running wild. Whatever conservative fantasies Michael Bloomberg and Ray Kelly have of keeping down the left, you know. And of course, we don't get anything from the people who are or really should be out there leading the fight. People like Christine Quinn. Who should be the first one out there complaining. Of course, we don't hear a peep from her. You know, and you got to wonder. It's like, you know, I mean, it was bad enough under Giuliani. Then it got even worse under Mike Bloomberg. And the city legislature is just turning a blind eye. They're unwilling to go toe-to-toe with the police because they're so scared that they'll be seen as possibly soft on crime that, God forbid, they may be seen as soft on crime. So it's like, oh, okay, yeah, you know, we'll overlook when you pepper spray innocent protesters who are causing nobody a problem, who are quiet, who are simply standing there quietly. You know, you can let your police officers just run wild, and we'll look the other way, because politically, to actually stand up and say something would be politically inconvenient for us. That's the reality. You know, I mean, I'll tell you, I saw O'Donnell, he tried to pin it on the cops. And sure, the cops are the first line. And, you know, these guys who come over and pepper spray innocent protesters, you know what? They need to be called out. But the reality is this kind of thing couldn't happen with the kind of impunity that it does without the civilian authority in the mayor's office and on the city council looking the other way. Could not happen. And, you know, where are these people? Where are they? That's what bothers me most of all about these Wall Street protests, the Occupy Wall Street protests, and the way that the New York City Police Department is dealing with them. I mean, it's just disgraceful. They have this guy on camera, on video, pepper spraying innocent women who have done nothing. And they still say that the police acted appropriately. That shows you a level of arrogance and lack of fear of being called to account now, that is deeply disturbing.
Becky, I went through a lot of footage to get that audio of that notorious incident there, but I noticed there were a lot of other things up on YouTube that had to do with the cops going after people who have professional-looking video cameras. And there were some people who were actually videoing when they were being attacked by the cops, which I thought was pretty incredible. They don't want people seeing this stuff. You know,
well, sure, because, you know, then look what happens. It gets on YouTube, and then they look bad because that's what they really care about.
And they really look bad. They apparently don't realize it will end up on YouTube anyway. That's crazy.
It is. It is. And that's the thing. The people who they're really looking to serve and protect are not the people in the street, not the citizens of New York, but the New York City Police Department and their fellow police officers. Okay, that's who they're serving and protecting. They're serving and protecting themselves from any recrimination so that they can run wild and these officers, these supervisors, can run around like violent thugs who have no business wearing a badge of honor, okay, and abusing citizens, okay, because that's convenient, you know. I mean, these girls were doing nothing. You could see in the video. They were doing nothing. They were a threat to no one.
Yep.
And then he just walked over and just psh, right in the face. You know, this is the kind of thing. And you know, they go and even in the face of this kind of video existing and being all over YouTube, and the New York City Police Department still says, oh, the officers acted appropriately.
Yeah.
I mean, it's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. Honestly. So, and you know, what else is disgusting is the way that, you know, Chas Bono has been treated by these idiots on, you know, it's funny because I don't know what to make of Fox News. It's like, on the one hand, you have this idiot Ablo who comes up and fictionalizes medicine. I mean, literally, stuff that even the APA is saying it's absolute nonsense. You know, watch out, kids, you'll catch transgenderism from the television.
And no wonder he no longer is a part of the APA.
Well, he quit because, you know, they basically said this guy's a liar.
Yeah.
Because he is. You know, I mean, you know, it's funny. It's really funny because you know who had the best line on this? I happened to be in a room where The View was playing one day, and they happened to be talking about Chaz, so I paid attention. And Whoopi Goldberg had the best line. She says, you know, this guy is worried about whether or not children, young children, are going to be affected by Chaz Bono. Well, they're not going to know that Chaz Bono is number one. First, he said, number one, what are kids 5, 6, 7 years old doing up that late watching this show?
Okay.
Number one.
Sure.
And number two is they're not going to know that Chaz Bono is a transgender person unless the parents tell them so. So it's a stupid argument. I mean, you think a 5, 6, 7 year old is going to be able to make that distinction on his own?
No.
I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Ablo is this kind of guy. He starts with a prejudgment and then trailers his argument to fit his already decided end game. Rather than the other way around, rather than like what a real scientist does, which is take the available evidence and put it together for, you know, for a reasonable hypothesis. He takes the hypothesis and moves the evidence around in order to fit the hypothesis. You know, I mean, it's just bad science and it's bad psychiatry. And the APA was right to call him out on it. And then, you know, as bad as that was, okay. We got to see this past week, MSNBC, I believe it was the first time, aside from a quick mention of Amanda Simpson last year sometime, this was the first time that MSNBC has ever taken a stab at any trans relevant anything. I want to play this clip of Ed Schultz. He's doing a feature on Chaz Bono. So who do you call when you want to do a feature on a famous transgender celebrity? You call a white gay guy, right? Run that clip.
Right? Joining me now is Mike Rogers, managing editor, managing director of RawStory.com. Mike, good to have you with us tonight. You want to answer to this Ablo saying that parents should keep their kids away from the TV when Chaz Bono is on the air. What do you make of it?
You know, I'm amazed at the influence these guys always seem to give television, some of this nonsensical stuff that, you know, watching Will and Grace will make your kid gay, watching Dancing with the Stars will now make your kid transgender. You know, these guys are grasping at straws. They saw today the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell take effect, and now that open gays can serve in the military, they have to swing their cannons, I guess, now toward reality game shows of all things.
I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. I think Mike Rogers is, you know, he's a good guy. He's a good writer. Certainly a media figure in our community. But why the fuck are they calling this guy to go talk about a transgender? Okay, first, you know, this was bad enough. And then there is Schultz later on, after that clip was recorded, but later on in the segment, Schultz asks him if it's gay bashing. And I felt like saying, well, no, you idiot. He's not a gay man. He's a guy with a girlfriend, so he's not gay, is he? But apparently Schultz is too ignorant to figure that out. Okay? And this is the problem with stations like MSNBC. They're so clueless about transgender issues. Okay? I mean, look at the Huffington Post. The Huffington Post is just as bad. I mean, they have this new section called Gay Voices. And in the subsections of Gay Voices, what do they have? They have a transgender section. Okay? And you go into that transgender section, and it's like, I would say probably 98% of the articles there were written by non-trans people, about trans people. It's the stupidest thing. It's like a waste of time. It's like having a white guy, a middle-aged white guy, host a feature on the issues of African Americans. Oh wait, MSNBC did that. They did. They hosted a feature on African Americans, hosted by Ed Schultz, and they were almost laughed out of God knows what.
Awesome.
And then at the last minute, they added Al Sharpton to add, I guess, give a little bit of credibility. But it's so stupid. It's so stupid. I mean, don't get me wrong. This has nothing to do with Mike Rogers. I mean, he's a good guy. He's a good spokesman for gay issues. But he has no business talking about trans issues. I mean, you know, and like I say, I don't blame Mike Rogers. I blame the idiot producer that called him and thought that because he's gay, somehow that he has some magical insight into transgender issues. Like saying, oh, gee, well, you're Hispanic, so you're a minority, too, so that means you must understand the issues important to blacks, right? I mean, it's that, it's on that level. It's that level of ignorance and stupidity on the part of MSNBC and Ed Schultz's staff. You know, and it goes to show you why they don't cover us, because they haven't got a clue as to how to do it properly. I mean, that much is obvious. You're torn, because on the one hand, you want them to cover this. You want MSNBC to talk about transgender people. But you want them to do it right, not in a way that's so idiotic that you wind up saying to yourself, is this really worth it? You know, I mean, why does Mike Rogers get a call? It's not like there's a shortage of transgender people. You know, it's not like there's a shortage of transgender people who could get in front of a microphone or a television camera in New York or D.C. If these people would bother, you know, not to just be lazy about it, which is what that is. You know, I mean, what does Mike Rogers have to do with transgender with Chaz Bono? I mean, really, who's next? Dan Savage? Oh, my God. You know, I mean, really, no, I mean, talk about an idiot. I mean, here's a guy who goes on Keith Olbermann back when I was on MSNBC and tells Olbermann that the only two issues remaining for LGBT people are marriage and don't ask, don't tell. I mean, talk about idiot. Okay. And then he goes and says, that now that the passage of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it's a great thing for all LGBT people. You know, totally ignoring the fact that, you know, it may be great for L and G and B, but transgender people, the discrimination continues on. But you see, of course, Dan Savage has such a narrow vision of the world, and he's so clueless to the issues of the middle and lower classes, you know, the people who don't float around in his Apple teeny crowd making six figures and up. You know, if you don't live in that world, then he has no idea what the hell he's talking about. I mean, this is the guy who says he wants to, who, you know, it gets better, but he has no clue how to actually make it better. You know, I mean, sure, it gets better if you're a wealthy author making six or seven figures. But, you know, for the rest of the world, for the other 99.999%, well, you know, that he's got no clue about. But he doesn't want to have a clue because Savage is part of this wealthy white gay elite that really don't give a shit about anyone else as long as they get the issues that are important to them on the table. They couldn't give a fuck whether transgender people have basic civil rights. They couldn't care less if some gay person in Idaho or Alabama, right? They're in their coastal communities and third parties and, you know, making six and figure salaries, and they're okay. So that's really what they give a shit about. And of course, those cute soldier boys that they have to have Don't Ask, Don't Tell repealed. And next, you know, they're going to throw the money at the Defense of Marriage Act, because that's what they care about. And the lower and the middle classes, well, that's somebody else's problem, isn't it? You know, that's the kind of level that we're talking about with Dan Savage and with those folks, you know, with a lot of the folks that you know, shall we say, the Apple teeny crowd? You know, I really believe that. You know, I don't think that there's a lot of LGBT or L and G folks who are of that crowd who really hate us or want to visit nasty things on us. I don't think that's the case. I don't think it's that people hate us or anything. They simply don't care. It's not their issue. They don't give a shit. They want to spend money on repealing DOMA. And when DOMA's done, they're done. Have a nice day. Okay? Just like we've seen with, you know, the Massachusetts organizations, you know, Equality Mass, you know, they win marriage, and then the leader of that organization hops on a plane and now is making six figures leading an organization out in California. Hey, we're done. Thank you. Let's take the money and run. Have a nice day. When they finished up with gay marriage in New York, oh, all the celebrities, bye-bye. And have you heard anything about gender lately? No, of course you haven't. Why? Because there's no money in it for Democrats. How much justice could you afford? And speaking of that, we're going to talk about that very issue with Babs Kasbar Sipperstein coming up at the bottom of the hour. You know, because the, let's be honest, the big problem with this is the Democrats. They had the opportunity, they had the votes, and they chose to throw us under the bus again. You know, and this isn't something like Don't Ask, Don't Tell that's been on the books, you know, a while and has been seriously trying to be repealed for maybe the last five or six. This is something they've been trying to pass since I was in grade school. And I'm almost 50 years old. That's what they threw under the bus. You know, why? Well, because the people making 100, you know, six and seven figures, they wanted the Soulja Boys to go first. You know, it wasn't like they had, you know, financial troubles. They were still having their debt parties. They were still focusing on, you know, issues that are important to them. So, you know, let's save ourselves money on taxes and let's take care of those cute Soulja Boys. Okay? And if it sounds like I'm nasty about it, you know what? Fuck you. You bet I am. Okay? Because when you throw hundreds of thousands of lower and middle class workers under the bus so that people can save money on their taxes, that deserves a fuck you. Talk to me about your taxes after the hungry are fed and the homeless have a place to sleep tonight. Then you can talk to me about your taxes. Fuck you. And you know what? I'm sorry. I guess, you know, that's not going to win me an invitation to a White House cocktail party, but oh well, that's how I feel. And, you know, I mean, it's the truth. You know, the White House doesn't want to deal with people like us because, you know, we're inconvenient for them. We are. We're inconvenient. We are loud. We don't take no for an answer. You know, we heckle President Obama. And, you know, well, the Democrats don't like that. They'd like it if we just gave them another pass and looked the other way while they fuck over the poorest and most disenfranchised in the community. And I think that it's time that that came at a price. Because the problem is that the Democrats don't feel they have to earn our votes. And that when you go out and you say you're about jobs, 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 and then you release a jobs plan that doesn't have even a mention of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act or of helping to bring up LGBT jobs, well, then you prove yourself a liar. You know, because really, when was the last time we heard from President Obama about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act? I'll tell you when it was. Before people went to the polls in November 2008. That was the last time the bill came out of his mouth by word. Okay? In other words, the last time he mentioned it by name was that time, or before he became president. Once he was in the White House, too bad, so sad. Let's move on to healthcare now. Let's move on to Don't Ask, Don't Tell. You know, jobs, jobs, jobs. Yeah, I mean for them, those people, the straight people, they're going to get jobs. You folks, well, you know, you gay people in those 29 states, you trans people in those 35 states, you'll just have to keep sitting around a little bit longer. So sorry, we're busy now. You know, oh yeah, we had the votes. We just don't have the interest in supporting you. So we're going to send George Miller out there to be a serial liar and make you promises that we have no intention of keeping. And then we're going to come back to you in 2011 and say, could we have your money and your votes again now? Because it'll be really different this time. We promise. Really, we will. It'll be different. You can trust us this time. Yeah, we know. We screwed you over the last time during the last election. Oh, in the last the election before that. And the election before that. And we tried to pass a bill and exclude you from it with the election before that. And in the administration before that, we had the president going around touting how anti-gay he was and how anti-transgender he was, and he was campaigning on that. But, you know, you can trust us this time. Really. This time, you know, it's going to be different. Really. I mean, are we stupid? Are they stupid? I just don't get it, you know? I mean, how are we supposed to exert our will when these people don't feel that they have to earn our votes? They don't feel that they have to do anything because, you know, who are you going to vote for, right? That's their attitude. They don't figure they have to do anything to prove anything to the rank and file, to the lower and middle classes. The only people they have to prove anything to is the money people. That's why you see attention being paid to the Defense of Marriage Act, and they're still, you can't even get a straight answer out of the president's press secretary on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. They're still running scared. They want your money, they want your votes, but they're not going to stand up and say, here's what I believe in, you can trust me. And you know what? I think it is right around time for us to take a quick break here, so we're going to do that. Mr. Mike is going to get Babs Kasbar Sipperstein on the line, and we will be back right after this one from Chain County.
Night as shadows fell upon my lonely room, I touched your golden hair, tasted your perfume. Your eyes were filled with love the way they used to be. Your gentle hand reached out to comfort me. Dream last night, too much to dream. I let rain of faith the light. I had too much to drink last night. Oh, last night. My room was empty as I staggered from my bed. I could not erase the image placed into my head. You were so real, I could feel your eagerness. Then when you raised your lips for me to kiss, in the dark, then you were gone, gone, gone. I had too much to dream last night, too much to dream. Too much to dream last night. No, last night. No, I had too much to dream last night. I had too much to dream. I am not ready to face the night. I had too much to dream last night. Oh, 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 last night. Oh, oh, yeah. Too much to dream last night. Too much to dream last night. Too much to dream last night. Too much to dream last night.
give you that science.
Folks out there, show up. Woody Allen once said, 80% of success in life is just by showing up. And that's what it is.
All right, hey everybody, we are back and we have Babs Kasbar Sipperstein on the line. Babs, how you doing?
Good, Becky, how are you?
Good. I think you're doing better because you were just elected to a new post at the Democratic National Committee, and you were elected to the executive board, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I have to ask you, because I honestly don't know, and I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who share this. What exactly does an executive board member do for the DNC?
Well, a lot of it I'm going to be finding out. There was an opening. I was appointed and confirmed as a member of the Democratic National Committee in August of 2009. Now, the Executive Committee is, they do a lot of the policy making and a lot of the driving force. You know, they meet much more often.
I mean, are they
it's a much smaller group. There are 447 members of the Democratic National Committee, and I think there are only about 35.
Are we talking about like creating the platform and that sort of thing?
Well, they would be involved in a lot more. How much more, I will be finding out very soon.
Okay,
I was elected. From my caucus, there was an opening, there was an opportunity in my Eastern Regional Caucus. Someone had to step down. There was an opening for a female representative from the Eastern Caucus to the Executive Committee. I ran and was elected.
Excellent. Okay. Now, I have to ask you, because I know, you know, I'm not the only one. Yeah, I may be one of the people who ask this question most often, but I'm hardly the only one asking. The truth is, as you know, as we all know, the Democrats, the last time around, Obama, he promised us, you know, get us the votes, get us the what we need to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and we'll do it. And we gave them that. You know, Barney Frank said they needed 15 seats. We gave them 22, I believe. And yet somehow they found a way not to deliver. And earlier this year, they saw Nancy Pelosi at Netroots Nation. When they asked her what happened, she said, well, you know, activists told me that they wanted this to go first. And to me, I was just flabbergasted. I'm like, I would love to know which activists those were, because there certainly wasn't anybody who came on this show.
And it certainly wasn't me, because I'm perhaps more frustrated than anyone else, because I had spoken directly to the speaker on a couple of occasions, and at some point there was a change. Now,
yeah, but the question is if we can't trust these guys, these people, how are we supposed to, you know, it was like, I don't know if you heard what I was saying before we had you on. I was saying, you know, it's like, it seems like they're coming back to us again here in for 2012 and saying, oh, you can trust us this time. This time it'll be different. And my question is, really? I mean, if you can't get the job done with the wind at your back in every way possible, why should we trust you now?
Well, yeah,
I mean, is there an answer for that?
Yeah, whatever I've done is by engaging and by pushing in as constructive manner as possible. Now, in the case of, and I believe it's Pelosi, because she was the key. She was the key. The Senate was not going to move on ENDA unless it got through the House. And I, to me, I think it left Barney a little embarrassed. So, yeah, the activists, I don't know. I've been trying to find out.
Ooh, you know, it's interesting because I've heard this kind of trickled back to me a little while ago, and I'm not going to say where this was from for, you know, on the air because I promised I wouldn't. But it seems like there were people who have intimated that the reason why ENDA didn't get a vote was it was payback for the actions of Get Equal, that they heckled Obama and they caused problems on the floor of the House with the magic marker thing, and that this was payback.
Yeah. No, I disagree for the reason that ENDA got stalled, you know, looking back and listening to words and listening to the speaker's words. The decision, I believe, was made sometime between November of 2009 and February of 2010. Probably when things were, and this was before Get Equal. I wouldn't give Get Equal that much credit, to be honest with you.
Let me ask you another question. The decision was
made in February before the, I would say, the middle of February of 2010. Mm-hmm. And Get Equal did their thing afterwards. Now, I spoke to Robin McGeehy of Get Equal, and frankly, I was a little upset that I wish, you know, some of the things that she had done, I wish she had engaged more people. And I told her very frankly, for example, the thing that they did in Nancy Pelosi's office in Washington, instead of getting a dozen people, I would have gone down there. I would have gotten a few dozen people. I would have brought my rabbi. I would have gotten other business people, other people, you know, and come down there en masse. You know, dozen kids, not going to do anything.
Right. And isn't that always our problem? Is that because we're such a small community with such a relatively small activist base, and because these things, you know, happen at times during the year, not everyone can get away, we never have the kind of large lobbying force that gays and lesbians have.
Well, I don't even think that the gays and lesbians do an adequate job of lobbying.
Right, but they have lots of money.
Some other groups
and the Democratic Party seems to prioritize elections donations. Look at how they didn't have time. We couldn't get a straight answer from Jay Carney, the president's press secretary, about ENDA, but yet the Senate somehow found time to hold a hearing, including comments from Pelosi and Reid and President Obama on how they all supported the repeal of DOMA. They couldn't find even time to address the issue of workplace rights in their jobs agenda, but yet they found time to pander to the gay marriage folks. And I'm just wondering, you know, what's the difference here? And the answer is obvious: money. These people are the ones with the money, and it seems pretty clear that that's what is the focus of the Democratic Party right now, because they're gearing up for next year and they're looking to fatten the election coffers. I mean, it seems pretty transparent to me, Babs. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. Let me go back to and then address that, because that was, to me, an opportunity that was missed. And I go back to Speaker Pelosi and who what she calls the activists. Now, the activists may be some moneyed friends with the people that she has an ongoing relationship with. You know, she hears what she hears. You know, she's got a louder voice. whereas there may be louder voices. So that means that we have to do better. We have to be
But is louder voice? I mean, let's be direct here, Babs. Are we talking about HRC or who are we talking about here?
There may be some. I don't think I wouldn't give, to be honest with you, HRC that much credit, because HRC appears to be more followers than leaders. Now, there may be some individuals, there may be some powerful individuals who are maybe involved with HRC.
Well, that's why I've been hearing the name David Smith keeps popping up in all the most interesting places, you know, I got to say.
Who was that?
David Smith?
David, yeah, well,
it seems like his name just, you know, pops up in a lot of places that, you know, are pretty, you know, that maybe, okay, maybe it's not an official HRC position.
Political advice,
it seems like, you know.
David,
you know, go ahead.
Yeah, David Smith, I don't think anybody will argue with the fact that he seems to be, I'll say, very kindly ambivalent about transgender rights, period. I frankly can't understand why he still has his job if HRC really puts themselves as an effective LGBT organization.
I have a problem with that, because, you know, I mean, we're talking about an organization that says it supports LGBT rights, and yet it has to have a diversity department headed by a trans woman. I mean, come on. I mean, shouldn't the entire organization be a diversity department? I don't get it.
Becky, I will agree with you on this one. Yeah.
I mean, that's...
You know, HRC, there are a lot of... Believe me, I know a lot of people that are board members of HRC, and they're great. They'd be there certainly fighting for fully inclusive LGBT rights. They're people actually running it, and certainly I can understand, you know, Smith being a problem. I recall with a lot of disappointment and anger after ENDA, where HRC had this little town hall meeting in Manhattan to supposedly explain their position and smooth over, you know, our dumping of the tea in ENDA. And this guy single-handedly managed to insult not only transgender people, but, you know, the progressive LGBT people that were present, and there were some straight people as well. Really the kind of guy that put fuel onto the fire. It was kind of amazing, you know, the attitude that he projected was not to heal, not to do any community healing, just the opposite.
Right, and you see, that's the thing, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think there are a lot of people within HRC who are interested in working with the community. I just don't think it's really the people who are ultimately making the decisions, because it seems like, you know, all of a sudden, I mean, is it really that much of a coincidence that HRC endorses Obama early, and then all of a sudden the Senate is holding hearings on repealing the Defense of Marriage Act, and Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama all express how much they want to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act, while they're not issuing the slightest peep about the Employment Non-Discrimination Act at a time when they're saying that their agenda is all about jobs. I mean, how many different sides of their mouths can these people talk out of? You know, And then they want to come to us, and like I said, and they say, oh, it'll be different this time. It's like, well, it's not different right now, at this exact moment. But it's going to be somehow different after we give you our money and our votes again? I mean, this is
Becky,
I wind up getting off the bus.
Yeah, you've said more than a mouthful. Let me just address HRC and then their endorsement of the president. I mean, who else are they going to endorse?
Right, but
I can't speak for them. Frankly, who else is there?
But isn't that the problem? Isn't that the problem right there, Babs? The Democratic Party doesn't feel obligated to earn our support. They just feel, who else is going to vote for us? So we don't have to earn your vote. You'll just vote for us anyway. We don't have to do anything for you.
You know, a lot of people tend to look, I think, at glass half full and others half empty. You've got to consider what this administration has done already. I just got a thing I'm sure you're aware of. The biggest thing actually for employment, for people's employment, is these no-match things with the Social Security numbers.
Absolutely. In fact, I lost two jobs behind
that. It didn't make any headlines, and it was quiet, but this in itself is a tremendous change of policy that's helped all of us.
But the question, of course, we always have when we hear of something like this, Babs, is just like as with George Bush and with, O'Donnell in Virginia, how can we be confident that the minute that a Republican takes over that office, things won't be rolled right back to the way they were, just like it was under George Bush when he repealed all the pro-gay executive orders, just like it was for gays in Virginia when O'Donnell came in and rolled back all the Tim Kaine stuff. This is what Republicans do now. They come in and they roll everything back to fit their own ideological belief system. I mean, that's what they do now.
Well,
so
you get a Republican president and a Republican Congress can undo an end of that might have been passed as well.
Only if Congress. That's much tougher to pull off than just being able to say, well, we're no longer going to follow an executive order.
Right. But the devil is in the details, and there is a lot of quiet things that are being done to change the infrastructure. Now, some of them may be able to go back, but a lot of the things will not be. And you've got to understand that this is...
I hope you're right, because
this is
that's
societal.
What I'm saying.
Yeah, this is societal change. And just
passing
no law is a silver bullet. What the administration has done, and, you know, I may not necessarily agree... And I think maybe the president should have been a little more aggressive and a lot of other things. But if you look at what he's done, and he's gotten a lot of criticism with, for example, DOMA and with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, this guy's a law. He's a constitutional law professor.
But you know what? The truth of the matter is, Babs, and I think you have to agree with me here, that, I mean, this guy, you know, if you don't want us to call you on it, then don't make the promises. This is what you said you would do. And then you say, and then he goes out and he says, oh, and I've accomplished everything that I promised you would do. And I hear you didn't. You didn't even come close. Who the hell are you kidding? And it's like, you know, it's like I feel the same way as back when Tim Kaine was DNC chair and he comes out and says, well, you know, these things don't happen overnight. And I'm like, are you living on the same planet as the rest of us? You know, what do you think that this fight began the day Obama was inaugurated? What are you, stupid? I mean, really? You know, it's the arrogance of these people to think that it's like, well, you know, now that we're in office, all the miles immediately go back to zero. I mean, that to me is downright offensive.
Have you been following been going on in Congress. Yeah.
I mean, for the most part, it is.
Simple, like the hate crimes bill, that should have been a no-brainer, how easy
right.
it was, you know, with the Republicans with the motion to recommit. Now, I was there. I was there at the I was invited to the reception at the White House after the hate crimes bill. And the only Republican legislator there was my congressman, Lenny Lance, here in New Jersey. And I really
You got Lenny Lance now? Oh, okay. I thought you were a Pallone.
I can't hear you.
I said I thought you were in Frank Pallone's district.
No. No.
Oh,
my town is cut in half.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a new one on me. Okay. I'm a Rush Holt girl myself.
Yeah. But Lance was the only Republican, and I went over to him because I worked with him when he was a state senator in Jersey, and he, of course, voted for a transgender equality bill. But I had to bite my tongue because he was there celebrating the victory, and he had voted for passing the hate crimes bill. But, you know, eight minutes before the final vote, Republicans came up with a motion to recommit, to kill the bill, and it barely passed. It took the Democratic majority to pass it. Every single Republican voted to kill the bill, including Lenny Lance, Ileana Ross Letton, and others who were original sponsors. It failed. The Republican motion to recommit failed. And then 8 minutes later, for the final vote, 44 of those Republicans flipped over and said, oh, we voted for the very first fully LGBT-included positive federal legislation.
Mm-hmm.
This is the problem with these motions recommit.
Right, but you know, the thing is as you and I well know, Babs, and other people who are listening should know, that's not going to hurt a legislator, a Republican, in New Jersey as much as it might in other areas of the country, because we're generally a pretty left-leaning state, all told. I mean, yeah, we have a Republican governor, but we tend to lean a bit towards the left. We have full employment rights for gays and lesbians and trans people. We have civil unions. We're working on gay marriage. We haven't quite gotten there yet, but we have more rights overall than most states in the union.
Yes.
I don't know if we're a good example when you apply it nationally. Do you know what I mean? I mean, do you agree?
You weren't that clear. Could you just...
No, what I mean is do you believe... I think that New Jersey in itself, because we're as left-leaning as we are, and because we've already have the accomplishments, we have these full rights, we have full rights for trans people, full rights for gays and lesbians, with the exception of marriage. We don't have gay marriage, but we do have civil unions. And I'm saying I'm not sure that our example is really a good one to use nationally, because let's be honest, nationally, we're way ahead of the curve.
We are, but, you know, we're the Northeast, and pretty much similar.
I don't know if I agree with that, because look, in the Northeast, we have New York, no trans rights, Massachusetts, no trans rights, New Hampshire, no trans rights, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, I don't think that we personally here in New Jersey are reflective of the Northeast either, because we're the only one. We're the only state, except for Connecticut. We're the only state in the Northeast that has them, has trans rights.
No, Maine also.
That's
because we organized a lot better.
Yeah, and we
that says something as someone who was
trust.
Involved in the passage of the transgender equality legislation. And someone who's seen what they've done in other states or haven't done, I think it's what we did right versus some of the other states.
Right. But I think it's also that we had partners in the gay and lesbian community, in the gay and lesbian activist community, who we could rely on and who we could trust. You know, I
without a doubt. But we were, it's the way we were organized and the way we engaged not only our LGBT allies, but our progressive allies.
Absolutely. I think that's a problem.
It wasn't just a gay thing, it was a progressive, and also with the women's movement.
Right, but look at how it's every person for themselves in New York. I mean, have you heard a peep? When I was at that HRC gala thing, we heard Governor Cuomo's representative say, "Oh, and we're going to fight for gender." Well, that was the last time I ever heard anything out of the governor's office. They were all about gay marriage, just like Congress is. But, you know, nobody seems it's like, you know, once the money started coming in, once all the celebrities started doing gay marriage commercials every 5 minutes, everybody forgot about us. You know, it was all of a sudden you never heard anything about gender again.
I'm also going to ask you, what have we or our brothers and sisters in New York, what have they done for themselves?
Well, actually,
New York is a particular problem. Not all the transgender community is for gender.
But what I read was, like, for example, a report from Melissa Sklars, who said once they won gay marriage, they said that they were hoping that they were meeting to talk about next steps. And she went in saying, let's talk about gender. Nobody wanted to talk about gender. They were all about, let's repeal the Defense of Marriage Act. There was no interest among the activists who had claimed that they were going to, you know, oh, now that we've got this, you know, after we get gay marriage, we'll come back for you. Well, it's like now they're moving on to the Defense of Marriage Act, and nobody wants to do that. So what happens is you get these people who make you promises, just like in our Democratic caucus in Congress, who make promises when it's convenient, when they need your support, but when it's time for them to deliver, all of a sudden there's always something else for them to do. And I think that's exactly what you're seeing in New York, and that's exactly what Mrs. Sklars reported.
I disagree. Let's take New York as a specific situation. We'll talk about that. I don't want to conflate the experience in Congress.
This is what Melissa Sklars reported recently, and I don't have the name of the article.
Well, I speak to Melissa. As a matter of fact, she is right now trying a new initiative, and I hope to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've offered. One of the things is, just in my position within the Democratic Party, within the Eastern, I'm representing the Eastern Caucus. New York is part of the Eastern Caucus. So whatever I can do to help there, but again, the actual party structure is not the legislature, the legislative leadership, nor is it the governor and the governor's leadership. There's no simple answer. It's something it takes a strategy, and it takes a matter of being there that they haven't done.
Well, yeah, but you know,
also, as I said, the mixed messaging when you have
it's mixed messaging from them. I mean, these are people that make promises
community.
As easily as breathing. But when you have
an organized group of transgender activists from New York City that say they're not in favor of gender, the Sylvia Rivera Law Project is not in favor of gender.
Why?
Why? I don't know. Their excuse is the gender also, unlike the New Jersey law, includes hate crimes. And for some crazy reason, they feel it shouldn't be part of the law.
God, not that again.
I cannot intelligently comment on that.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know what, Babs? We're right up against the top of the hour. You want to stick around through the break and talk a little bit more?
All right. If you can give me about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Mike, yeah. We can throw a couple songs on there?
Sure can.
All right. Well, we do that, and we are talking to Babs Kasbar-Sipperstein. This is the Rebecca Juro Show, and we will see you back here in a couple more minutes for some more good talk. Did we just lose Babs?
No, I'm here.
Yeah, Babs.
Okay. I thought I heard something go. Oops. Like you hung up. But see that?
You know,
that's my issue, Babs.
You know, you think it's disgusting. There are certain realities, and there are certain. You know, we're talking about where are we? What's our strategy? And you know, somewhere along the line. Priorities changed.
90% of the workforce is better than going after one that impacts the other 99%.
Huh?
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you hear what I said? I don't understand why the Democrats wish to be taken seriously on jobs, but yet they throw the bill that affects the largest group. You know, the people in the 29 states if they're gay and 35 states if they're trans, that bill goes in the dumper, and instead they protect the small fraction of 1% serving
about
in the U.S. military.
Becky,
they call
Becky,
that progress. I don't get
you're
it.
You're talking about the Democrats, but you're also talking I think this was a decision made by Speaker Pelosi. And
right, and I question that decision.
So
I think you throw
about
away
one powerful person.
I think the question is do Democrats really care about what's right or just what's convenient for Democrats?
You're conflating all Democrats with one person who is the leader in the House, and I don't think that's quite fair. I mean, there's...
Well, what about Harry Reid? He certainly could have introduced it.
Pardon?
We didn't see anything from him. We didn't see anything from Barack Obama. All three, they controlled all three segments of the
Harry,
federal government, and we didn't get a peep out of any one of the three of them.
Before, the Senate was not going to move on it. We went down early to D.C. We spoke to Reid's people, and because of the little back and forth, they were
because it's politically inconvenient for Democrats.
They were not going to do anything until the House moved the bill.
Right, and you see, this is the problem. The House says we won't do anything until the Senate acts, and the Senate says we won't do anything until the House acts, and the President says, "Oh, we don't want to talk about that. We want to talk about health care." And then my question to you, Babs, is why should we be supporting this kind of
politics? Health care was a very, very big issue, and this is what this was.
Why should we be rewarding this kind of behavior? That's what I don't get. Why should we be endorsing this kind of thing of being thrown under the bus again, and we are endorsing this kind of behavior with our money and our votes? I don't get why we should be doing that. That's my problem with it.
Well,
you want to take away
everything that the president has done, everything the administration has done, just what I mentioned with Social Security, which is probably one of the biggest things to help transgender people in employment and preventing them from being fired as they have been done in the past. This administration has also added gender identity into much of the internal federal workforce.
But they refuse to issue an executive order that says that all federal contractors have to regulations supportive of gender identity and sexual orientation. Obama's not willing to do that.
We're working on that.
They've been working on that for 2 years now, and they haven't delivered. I mean, this has become the pattern with these people.
Twiddling on their thumbs.
I think they are. I mean, don't you think nearly 3 years is more than enough to come up with a single executive order? I mean, it just seems like what they're really doing, where the actual delivery comes, is on the issues of what the people with the most money care about, marriage and those kind of things, and military service, where the people with the big money care about, and the issues of the lower and the middle classes, those somehow never quite arrive. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Well,
I really don't.
If that's the reality. I mean,
the results speak for themselves, Babs. Come on. I mean, marriage and military service are the issues of the upper class, and those are the ones that get attention. Right?
So we have to do more.
Yeah.
We have to be bolder. We have to be smarter.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly that we have to be bolder, we have to be smarter,
but the reality
and we have to be stronger. I mean,
but when do we start holding these people accountable and say, you have to be more honest? When you make us a promise, you have to be willing to deliver. And you know, if you don't deliver, that there's going to be a price to be paid.
Okay, what's the price?
Do you know what I'm saying?
Are we going to cut off our nose to spite our faces?
But is that the point? And I say I'm approaching it from the other side. Is why are we rewarding bad behavior. When we're not talking about an issue like don't ask, don't tell, which is really the repeal effort has been what, maybe 5 years in earnest? Whereas we're talking about a multi-generational bill, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and they still can't get the job done. I mean,
but it's a matter of power. And there was, I think, and I can only speculate, that there may have been some individuals with the kind of power, the kind of relationship to change what the speaker had been very, very specific as far as a priority. Now, besides, there was other legislation that got caught in the wayside also. ENDA was originally supposed to be going with a federal bill for domestic partnership. That didn't go through either.
Right.
They were, if in November of 2009, you know, this was, you know, after the hate crimes bill was passed and this, you know, like, what's next? And talk to the people down in Washington. It was ENDA and domestic partnership for the next two big things. And when I spoke to the speaker was Jersey, I spoke to her after she spoke at a luncheon. And she was very clear. This was November 2009, and it was, you know, the domestic partnership, it was ENDA, and then don't ask, don't tell. By February, she was only talking about don't ask, don't tell.
Right. And my theory on it is it's not about what's best for the American workforce. I mean, for in honor of their jobs agenda. It's about what's most convenient for Democrats who are skittish and unwilling to stand up for their values. I mean, I think that's the real problem, is cowardice.
One at a time, the offstage announcer says.
Do you want me to speak or not?
Yes, I'm just throwing it out there for you.
To me, by doing really nothing after health care, they appeared to go into a defensive shell, and that cost Pelosi her speakership, because there was, you've got to be totally aggressive. I can't speak for the tactics. I can only observe what was done. I can only speak up to.
Well, then let me put it to you this way, Beth. Do you approve? Do you think they did the right thing?
Well, look at the results. Look at how many votes, how many seats they lost. You know, Pelosi lost her speakership.
Right,
And I firmly believe that she'd been more aggressive. Now there was a lot of twisting, distortions over the health care, and the other that there would have been a lot of seats lost anyway. But there were a lot of close things. I think if she had been stronger and pushing for not only our legislation, there were other pieces of legislation for the progressive community. It's not us.
Yeah,
not only
but
us.
You know,
there are a lot of things that I believe she could have been doing and forcing that legislation that would have, I think, invigorated the electorate, and it certainly. Maybe she could have kept her speakership. She certainly would not have, the Democrats would certainly not have lost as many seats in the House as they did.
I tend to agree with you.
Looking at it as a piece of basic strategy, the facts unfortunately speak for themselves. So it's not that we were thrown under the bus. I think this was the strategy judgment.
Well, then why weren't they honest with us?
And you saw what happened. Believe me, I don't think this was done deliberately.
But they were not honest with us. I mean, I counted personally, at least, and this was probably, I'm probably underestimating here, but I personally counted at least seven times that George Miller said, oh, don't worry, you're going to have a vote on ENDA. It's happening very soon. Seven times that he promised that, and seven times it never showed up. It's like, why not just be honest with us and say, look, we're having a political problem here, and it's not going to happen. Understand that. But they didn't do that. They just kept lying and lying. And don't worry, it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. And then it never comes. And then they come back to us and say, oh, you can trust us this time. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think this was a lack of leadership and judgment. Whether it was lying, whether it was good intentions, I don't know. I can't speak for that. I can't.
I mean, isn't this the party that cried wolf? Do you know what I mean?
No,
oh, don't worry. We're for real this time. And then they wonder why there's such an enthusiasm gap. Do you know what I mean?
Didn't I explain that I thought it was? I don't think this was.
Yeah, no. I like I said, I agree with you. Is that's what I'm saying? But you know, this is a party that does not take care of its base.
What's
they
the alternative?
For granted.
Becky, what's the alternative at this moment in time? There is
I don't know. Maybe it's a third party. Maybe it's something else. Well, but,
third party?
But,
look, a third party gave us Bush. You thank Ralph Nader and the people that voted for him.
Oh, yeah.
Third party they also gave us
yeah,
Bill
third
Clinton.
Party is a total disaster.
Hey, wait a minute.
We're
third
suffering.
Party also gave us Bill Clinton. Remember Ross Perot? Come on. Works both ways.
Okay, so what?
I mean, you know, so it depends. I mean, and as you well know, because you're very familiar with New Jersey politics, a third party gave us Chris Christie because of Chris Daggett, who drained enough votes off of incumbent Democrat John Corzine to tilt the election and put Chris Christie in the governor's chair here in New Jersey.
Last election, the Tea Party.
You don't think so? You know, wait a minute, hang on. You don't think so, Babs?
That's debatable because a lot of those middle votes, it would have been very, very close.
Let me put it to you this way. If Chris Daggett were out of the equation, if independent gubernatorial candidate, Chris Daggett were out of the equation, do you think Corzine could have won that election?
It would have been, obviously, it would have been very much closer, but it still wasn't in the bag.
I would agree with you there, absolutely. I mean, add to that the fact that we here in New Jersey have a habit of throwing out governors after one term. We tend to blame them for everything.
Good.
We do. We do. We every time there's a bad economy or anything, we blame the governors. Taxes get too high, we blame the governor. We've done it many times.
Well, I was involved in that race. I was involved with quite a number of things. The campaign that Corzine ran was not strong. I don't think he really had his heart in the race after that accident.
Honestly,
he did very little outreach. He did not use the governor's mansion, Drumthwacket, as Christie uses now, as other governors had used before for political purposes. And there was a lot of outreach he didn't do until last minute. Also, he spent much less money, and he relied on others, so
right. But yeah, I also
at best it would have been a toss-up. But he,
but
there
you
were
know,
a lot of people
of
in
the
Democratic
that,
Party that wished that Dick Cody would have that he would have stepped down.
Yeah, all right,
Cody
fair enough.
Run.
But here's
and
the other
was
thing:
was way before, it, you know, the election. So
okay, but fair enough. But isn't it also the fact that Chris Christie, love him or hate him, has a personality, whereas John Corzine has all the personality of shredded cardboard? I mean, honestly, you know, I mean, the guy was just not a good campaigner. He was a Wall Street wonk, and he talked like one.
Nobody's going to argue with you with that. You know, he's a Wall Street executive who wanted to do good, against a very smart, was a politician. He had run for office. He was extremely smart. As you think of it, as U.S. attorney, he had a lot of goods on his fellow Republicans, so he could rely on their support. And if you recall, during the Bush years, when Gonzalez was putting pressure on the U.S. attorneys because they weren't partisan enough, and a lot of U.S. attorneys who were honestly doing their jobs got fired, Christie did not get fired. As a matter of fact,
because he was
suddenly
telling...
his prosecutions were very partisan all of a sudden, because he started off prosecuting and indicting Republicans and Democrats alike. All of a sudden it was only Democrats. So
you've
got a guy that's truly, as far as politically, Machiavellian.
Yeah. So anyway, you had an amateur versus a pro
in a sense.
Right. But getting back to what we were talking about, which is the upcoming election, what would be your suggestion? What do we do now? I mean, how do we ensure that we don't have essentially a repeat of 2008 with another wishy-washy executive branch and a wishy-washy Congress that's too afraid to do anything, that's so scared, that's so terrified of dealing with transgender issues that they won't even hold a hearing with actual transgender people there to speak for themselves? We have to have gay and lesbian proxies to speak on our behalf. I mean, how do we get these people to finally show a little cojones here?
I don't think that part, if the Democrats are in charge of the legislative Congress, I don't think that would be a problem. I honestly don't.
But it was a problem last time. They refused to allow any transgender people to speak at a hearing on our own rights. So,
The hearings were, I think, almost too casual. I wasn't happy with it. The hearings anyway, even as a gay person, the hearings did not give, I think, the type of drama that should have been there.
So do you expect
they didn't have the impact. So I don't think from an advocacy point of view, they were particularly good. It was almost as if there was kind of like a slam dunk, and perhaps the administration and the speaker weren't on the same page. This is something that made me think, and perhaps I interpreted it a little bit differently. I interpreted it more as, hey, this is a slam dunk. They don't have to go through any drama.
I don't think it's not.
At a certain point, the speaker and the administration were on the same page. And I think that's part of the problem. I don't have the answers. You know, I observe, I see things, and maybe I look at it a different way.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
I don't see it necessarily as the same way that you do. I also look at it as maybe inefficient legislation.
I'm just looking at it from a pragmatic point of view. But
I look at it from a different point of view, pragmatic also.
But see, that's the thing. I mean, I think what history has taught us clearly is that if we don't push these people, if we don't embarrass them, if we don't call them out,
who are these people?
Then they won't do anything because they don't feel they have to earn our votes.
Who are these people?
These people, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's, and of course I don't mean these people as individuals, I mean them and their staffs and their you know, the political players surrounding them, whether it's Obama, Pelosi, Reid. I mean, you know, it's amazing to me To go back to this one more time, it's amazing to me that we can't even get a straight answer from the president's press secretary on whether he supports ENDA, but yet somehow in the middle of a budget battle where nothing less than the entire world economy is supposedly at stake, they can find time to hold hearings on the Defense of Marriage Act and for various, politicians in the Democratic Party, whether it's Debbie Wasserman or Kristen Gillibrand or Obama or all these other guys are just lining up one after the other to say how much they support repealing the Defense of Marriage Act. I mean, I just think it's kind of amazing that it's like, you know, this is supposedly their jobs, jobs, jobs agenda. When exactly does that jobs, jobs, jobs agenda include the rest of us? When is it our turn? And that's what I think it's
We've got a lot more engaging to do. We have a lot more educating to do.
But we hear that all the time. I think it's nonsense.
I think we've done
the education. They know what a transgender person is. We don't have to explain that to them anymore.
They?
Come on.
I went
Jeff
down.
Bono on television. Hello? Come on.
No. You should be down there. You should be talking to people. I remember being down in Washington with a friend of mine from Florida, the head of the Florida Democratic Party LGBT, the legislative director of the LGBT caucus of the Florida Democratic Party. And he's a big AIDS, national AIDS activist. So he invited me to come to a couple of meetings he had set up with some congressmen and one of his Democratic senator. And I remember one guy in particular, he was a blue dog Democrat from the Panhandle. And, I sat in with him, introduced, we started talking. He had never met a transgender person before.
Okay, but not meeting one and not knowing anything say, gosh, I just don't understand what this crazy transgender thing means. I mean, those days are over. Come on.
You meet a person face to face. You relate with the person. How do you think we passed the law in New Jersey?
Yes, I agree with you. But that was before, we had people like Chaz Bono in the news. That was before, we had all these movies and all this media and stuff. Okay,
I'm very supportive of Chaz Bono, but I haven't seen him on television. I don't watch Dancing with the Stars.
And yes, but a lot of people do. Come on.
It's that one-on-one.
I agree with you. But the point is without that media support, without introducing ourselves, because no matter how much we go for that one-on-one thing, we're still only a limited number of people, and the media reaches a lot more people. There's a reason why you saw those gay marriage commercials on our New York area television every 2 seconds.
No.
Because how do you think they got it passed? Okay, because it builds popular support. We can't even get on Rachel Maddow.
Well,
and that's
work
the thing.
On it. Why not?
That's the problem. We don't represent a lucrative enough demographic to MSNBC for them to bother. They want to go for the issues of the rich, white, gay men. Marriage and military service. Cute, white, gay men. That's what they want. They want the marriage and they want the military service.
So
they want to see lots of shots of Dan Choi and Victor Fahrenbach. That's what
they want. And yell and scream, or you're going to find a way of doing something in a positive way.
And they have one other thing that we do not, and nobody's lining up to give it to us. Money. I mean, those commercials cost money. And if you don't have the money, you don't get the commercials.
So?
Well, how do you reach all those people? I mean, there's just so much you can do face-to-face. I mean, if we have to depend on ourselves, we're deep shit.
Do we find a way of getting money, or we find a way of engaging people? There's more than one way to skin a cat, and it's not one thing or another. This is going to take a multi-level, multi-pronged strategy.
I agree.
We've
got to
do a little of everything. And we've got to make nice, and we've got to make friends and allies with a lot of different people.
Right.
And maybe we have, you know, are there transgender millionaires?
That's
they probably
the
are.
And these are
how do
organizations.
We engage them?
There are too many of these organizations that say they're on our side, but the truth is that when a marriage issue comes up, they go back to being perfectly happy to throw us under the bus. And we have a Democratic Party that cares more about keeping up the election coffers. So that's why you get Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi lining up to tell everybody how much they're in support of the repeal of the Defense of Marriage Act. But when you ask them for 2 seconds on ENDA, all of a sudden they're much, much too busy to be bothered to talk to you. Do you know what I mean? I think
so you engage them. You get involved. You get as many people involved in the party as possible. And I'm trying to do, you know, I'm trying to do what I can by getting involved, by engaging and stepping up within the party, within and gaining whatever access I can. But I'm
right.
One person.
Right.
I'm lonely. I need more people to do more than just talking and complaining. I need more people to actually get involved face-to-face directly, show them what we can offer.
I completely agree with you. But the reality is it's unfortunately at this time, and hopefully this won't always be the case, but at this time it's almost a self-defeating prophecy because we're so discriminated against, there's much less money. Because there's much less money, there are much fewer people who are able to, you know, get on a plane or a bus or a whatever and go to D.C. or wherever to lobby, who are able to take that time off of work, who are able to make that trip and fund a trip like that financially. You know, and so it becomes a self-fulfilling problem. You know, I don't know exactly what the figure is, but I would wonder how many in our community are in poverty. Well, people who are in poverty don't make long bus trips to lobby Congress. And even when they do, very often we have situations like we saw with the Senate, where they just don't want to hear those voices. They want to hear about the war heroes and the business leaders. They don't want to talk to the grocery clerks and the parking lot attendants. They don't care about the lower and middle classes. They care about the people with the money. We see this over and over and over. And it seems like it's just as true for Democrats as it is for Republicans. It's like it's all about how much justice you can afford and how much attention you can afford to purchase. If you're wealthy, white, and gay, they'll give you attention. If you're poor and transgender, they don't want to know you.
So why don't you change it?
Well,
how do you rise above? What do we have to do? How many of us don't care or to do anything? I see it all the time.
But is it don't care?
I'm not making an excuse, and I'm not disagreeing with the fact that money, of course, talks. There's no doubt about it. But action in other ways can talk, too. It's not all about money.
Oh no!
So that's no excuse.
Yeah,
that's no excuse.
I agree with you entirely. I agree with you entirely. But my problem is that there's
not frustrating.
You know, we're never going if that's going to be the criteria, we're never going to have enough people. We're never going to represent enough. In terms of money and votes, for these people to pay attention.
Well, these people, what we have to learn and what we did in Jersey, I think should be a model. Now, there was an advantage because we had a fairly, maybe what I call immature organized gay and lesbian community that wasn't firmly established, and but we were part of, as that community matured, we were fully part of it and integrated ourselves so that we worked for domestic partnership and marriage equality. They worked for our transgender rights. But I think we showed that when people in the LGBT community can work together and they want to work together, where they realize that in unity there is strength, we can get things done.
And you know, here's the
other
thing.
Other states, I understand there are problems. But when I look at New York and see what they've done, where they've had opportunities, where they've had problems within themselves. I remember how Niagara blew apart. People went their own way. And
yeah. But here in Jersey, Mike, there's something going on with the... I'm hearing something come back. Oh, there we go.
There is a little problem with the Skype connection. It's got your Skype connection, Becky, has gotten a little strange during the past 10 minutes or so. It sounds like we're just having it cut out and
should
stuff
I
like
reconnect?
It. Why don't we do that? And Babs, can you stick with us for a few more minutes and conclude the interview? Because it's we really appreciate having you on. And,
yeah, this is a good conversation.
Yeah, I must say that we're getting to a good point here. So we don't want to end this right now. We want to. Becky, if you would just.
All right, let me hang up on you, and then you can call me back.
Would you like me to call you back? Okay. And luckily, Babs, luckily, Babs, we're great at editing things. So when our podcast comes out, there we go. I'll go ahead and call Becky back without the video. Sometimes the video that I can see, Becky, although we're not doing a video podcast. There we go.
I'm back. Hello.
There we go. Hey, you're sounding better. And I'll duck right out of here. Goodbye.
Okay, so now, anyway, let's get back, and we should tell people, of course, they are listening to the Rebecca Giroux Show. We are talking to Babs Kasbar Superstein, and so what do we do, Babs? I mean, you know, I think you agree with me that there's a real resistance to passing ENDA, and from all reports that I'm hearing, including, I might add, from you, the last time you were on the show, that there's a resistance, and part of the problem is the transgender thing. What do we do? I mean, everybody says lobby, and sure, that's an important thing to do. But the reality is we've been lobbying for decades, and we still haven't convinced. What do we do to convince certain people in Congress when we can't even get the Congress to tell us?
Well, right now, forget about Congress, because the House, there's no way anything is going to be done, anything pro-LGBT, anything sane for the good of the country is going to be done with the Republican House.
North Carolina. Who's the Kay Hagan. That's who I'm thinking of.
Kay Hagan just signed on as a sponsor of ENDA, which...
It was a surprise.
People told me,
they've
been working on her for, I think, 2 years, and there should be absolutely no reason why, because she sponsored a state law as a state senator.
But didn't she sponsor as a state law, as a state senator, a law that protected gays and not trans people? Because the word that I was getting back... from the media and from people who just I spoke to, said that her problem was not with the gay thing; it was with the trans thing.
I think there was a little fear. One of the things that I think is going to be a very positive thing, certainly in North Carolina, is the fact that there's the Democratic National Convention 2012 is going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Absolutely. I think it's great.
There was a big push by the a lot of the activists.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you another question.
To be as fully inclusive as possible.
Okay. Let me ask you, in your opinion, and I realize I'm putting you out, I'm asking you to go out on a limb here, but I'm going to do it anyway. In your opinion, do you think the Democrats are going to retake the House, hold on to the Senate and the White House? I mean, are we going to get another crack? And if so, do you think that we can trust them to really do something this time? Or is this just another exercise?
I believe that if we take back Congress, and of course the presidency, I think there's going to be a big push to get things done. I think the leadership will have learned a lesson. This was supposed to be this was actually supposed to be a no-brainer. This was on the right track. ENDA was less transgender inclusive. ENDA was acknowledged as less controversial than Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And this is what frustrates me and infuriates me.
Now I should point out that you told me something the other night when off the air, when we were talking on the phone. You said that, and you agreed with Diego Sanchez, that they had the votes to pass it in 2008 or 2009, I guess is more appropriate, or 2010, that the votes were there and they could have done it. They just made a choice not to do it.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the most damning evidence. You had the chance. You could have passed this bill.
There were a lot of things.
And
it was not just us. There were a lot of things. Again, that's why I point at my frustration with, and the only thing I can point at is it's Pelosi and whatever the leadership was. I don't know.
And that's really the question, was because, you know, you heard Pelosi at this Netroots Nation thing say, oh, well, that's what activists told us they wanted.
Whatever the decision.
And you say to yourself, it's like, do you really
think
that
ENDA
do you think we're that stupid?
Herself.
Yeah.
So it's not like people said, hey, you know, we're gonna be out there and say the hell with trans people. There were other things that...
I think they said, let's go for the low-hanging fruit. Let's do as little as possible. Let's stick our necks out as little as possible and still get credit for being LGBT supportive.
I don't know, because that Don't Ask, Don't Tell happened after the election. So it makes no... It's one of the things that makes no sense.
Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and I use this as my own metaphor, but I think going for Don't Ask, Don't Tell and then throwing ENDA under the bus again, I think it's like, you know, going after and like, you know, having the police respond to a mugging in great detail and you know, really focus on the mugging while they're focusing so hard on the mugging that they fail to notice the bank robbery taking place across the street.
Well, and however you want to call it. I just thought, I thought it was a poor decision. That's just leave it at that.
I'm just saying, Babs. You know, it's like either they're idiots, and I don't believe they are idiots, or they're being willfully just looking the other way and saying we're going to do this because it's more convenient, it's more politically okay. You know, we don't have to pay much attention, and we still get credit. And, you know, I just think when you know, it's one thing when it's a cash for some program. This is people's civil rights. And I just don't think you can call yourself a liberal and a progressive if you treat people's basic civil rights in the way that these people are treating us. And that's really where I come down. And it's like, you know, at least if they had made an effort and said, you know what, we're not going to do it this time around. Here's why. You know, but they didn't do that. Didn't do it.
Becky, I'm not a mind reader.
I know, but I'm just, you know, I think a lot of people are pretty angry.
You know,
and they're going to say, you know, they're going to be more careful this time. Because all of us believed in Obama. We thought he was the second coming. I mean, you know.
Well, he's He's human.
You know, and I say that as a Reformed Jew. And I don't mean a Reform as in Reformed synagogue. I mean Reformed as in I was born Jewish whatever. But anyway.
Regardless, you have to, you know, not, I don't think anyone's perfectly happy, but you have to admit, you know, again, we can look at the things that weren't done, but look at what he has done, what his administration has done, more for transgender, more for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights, and I think respect, individual respect, than any other and all other presidents combined have done for us. So, yes.
But you know what? Has he done more than most? Yeah, absolutely. In fact, has he done more than anyone? Absolutely. But, you know, when the centerpiece of your promise to this community, I mean, which you have to say, what's more basic than the right to go to work every day, the right not to be discriminated against when you rent a home? I mean, which of those things is more basic to, you know, what should be your rights as a citizen? And you know, they do everything else. It's like they put in all the trimmings, all the bells and the whistles, but they haven't built the foundation, and that's what they're afraid of.
I don't think they're afraid of. I think decisions were made. I don't know. I'm not privy to it. I'm not happy with whatever decisions, but it was. I wish I knew why or how. I don't. Somewhere between November 2009 and February 2010, the speaker switched the priority. There are other benefits for gays and lesbians. As I said,
that's the key,
partnership
right
legislation was supposed to have gone through. It did not. There are a lot of other things. All we can do is build on what we have, legislation that was passed, the tremendous amount of things from the federal infrastructure that's been done, that's being done, you know, the things with the Veterans Administration. There's a lot of things. I mean, we had, and I guess I can talk about it now. There was a whole big thing about the meeting where we actually got our policy wonks, our transgender policy wonks from across the country at a meeting in the White House, the executive office building, with the administration policy wonks face-to-face talking about transgender issues. And it was supposed to be kind of a small thing about a dozen of our people with a dozen of theirs. It's just everybody from the administration, they had like 50 people. There's an awful lot of progress. It doesn't make any headlines, no bells and whistles, but there's a tremendous amount of infrastructure progress being made. Again, it's that one-on-one.
The people that are in there
know us, understand us, have a chance to speak one-on-one with issues, not something on television or something like that. That's the kind of societal progress that we have to make.
This is
our cultural
right. I agree with
and
you.
And that is being done, and that's being encouraged by this administration. So, you know, you can talk about what he hasn't done, but look at what has been done,
mm-hmm.
and the promise of more. But we can't just complain. We have to be proactive and engaging in a positive way.
I understand what you're saying. Hey, Mike, I'm getting a little feedback on my own voice.
Having a little problem there. Okay, yeah. Let me reset something on the board.
How's
that?
Oh, let's see. No, still hearing it.
Oh, dear. How strange.
I'm getting little snatches of my own words about
We don't like that. That's kind of confusing.
Yes, it is.
Guys, it's almost 9, I think.
Right, and we're about to say goodnight to you because it's almost 9 o'clock, and so I'm going to say goodnight to you now, Babs. Thank you for putting up with me and all my my bitching. But is there anything you want to, before you go, is there anything you want to throw out there as what you think our next step should be as a community to make sure we don't have a repeat of 2009, 2010?
Well, we got to get involved, make our voices heard in a positive way. And whether it's working at a local level, working on a campaign, going, volunteering, you know, maybe we don't have the money, but we can certainly volunteer. We can be a volunteer on a campaign. We can show up. We can volunteer even at the HRC or a task force or some other fancy affair. They always want volunteers. Last year, I was honored by the Delaware Stonewall Democrats at an event in Rehoboth Beach. They had just about every elected officer in the state of Delaware, including the governor was being honored along with me. Where I was, you know. But what frustrated me, and it wasn't a particularly, it was a fancy place in Rehoboth Beach. It wasn't a particularly expensive, dollar thing to get in. But they had volunteers. And as you know, Delaware had just passed a Sexual Orientation Non-Discrimination Act. They didn't have transgender. And I mentioned it. But what really got to me is I was the only trans person there. And transgender people, if they were really interested, they could have volunteered for that event. They could have made themselves public. Mm. That's something we can do. We got to step up.
Okay. I think you're absolutely right about that.
If we don't make ourselves visible, what do you expect?
I hear what you're saying. Anyway, thank you, Babs, for coming on and spending like basically most of the show with us. And well, it's true. I mean, you were on at 7:30. It's almost 9 o'clock here.
Thank you.
Thank you again, and I'm sure we'll be doing this again. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Right. And get people to the polls. I was going to say, you know, there's a lot of voter suppression that cuts on our side, on the progressive.
Absolutely.
And Democrat
folks,
side.
You know, check your state. See if you suddenly need a photo ID.
Oh, dear. Well, we do here in Arizona.
I was going to say, suddenly you're going to need these.
We wouldn't want the wrong people voting, would we?
Well, I mean, you know, actually, I believe the National Center for Transgender Equality actually put out. And all those, like, you know, more of the along the lines, it's a concern, which is not surprising, you know, because let's be honest, okay, people like us, queer folk, okay, we tend to vote pretty liberal. I mean, you know, we're as likely to vote for Obama as probably African Americans. Not that many of us are not African American in any case. But I think we tend to lean toward, I mean, yeah, sure, there are organizations like Geo Proud and the crap, but, you know, we're the majority in our group. And I hear the music. It is time for me and Mr. Mike to get the heck out of here. The show will repeat in just a few minutes, so if you missed anything, you can stick around for that. Thank you to Babs Kasbar. Thank you to Mr. Mike. And thank you to you for tuning in and supporting this media. We will see you next week.